This is the Past Lives podcast, and I'm your host, Simon Bown. My mission here at the Past Lives podcast is to investigate evidence that demonstrates survival of the human soul. We look at past life memories, near-death experiences, spirit communication, and other incredible phenomena. To get access to the extended versions of the episodes, you can join the Past Lives podcast Patreon campaign. And when you sign up for $5 a month, you get an extended episode every week. And for $2 a month, you get an extended episode every month. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/pastlivespodcast or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastlifeshypnosis.co.uk. Also, when you book a past life regression hypnosis session with me and you're a patron, you get a 25% discount. And I'm offering a free consultation call, which can be booked on my website. In part one of this podcast, I will be talking about the near-death experience of Pam Reynolds. And then in part two, I will be going over the near-death experience of a woman who was blind from birth, but could see during her experience. The near-death experience of Pam Reynolds is one of the most intriguing. If a group of near-death experience investigators had sat down with a group of doctors and worked out an experiment to study a near-death experience, then this would have been one of their scenarios. Pam Reynolds had a basilar artery aneurysm. The basilar artery is part of the blood supply system for the brain and central nervous system. It is formed where the two vertebral arteries join at the base of the skull. To have an aneurysm at the basilar artery is a very serious condition, and her neurosurgeon, Dr. Robert F. Spetzler, of the Barrow Neurological Institute in Phoenix, Arizona, knew straight away that operating using standard procedures was not viable. When the aneurysm had first been discovered, Pam's own doctor had told her there was no chance of her survival. He said she should prepare herself for the end and that she should spend time with her children. But when she met Dr. Spetzler, he proposed a surgery known as deep hypothermic cardiac arrest. This is a procedure he had established himself and was known in the surgical profession as standstill. Pam's heartbeat and breathing would be stopped, her body temperature be lowered to 60 degrees, and they would drain the blood from her head. As she would be hooked up to several different monitoring systems, the surgical team would be able to confirm there was no brain activity and no heartbeat. According to all measurements, she would be dead. When the team was sure it was safe to operate, they would remove the aneurysm. They would then reverse the procedure and revive her, bringing her back to life. As part of the preparation for the operation, Pam's eyes were taped shut. As a way of monitoring activity in her brainstem, they would use auditory evoked potentials. This is where a sound was played into both of her ears using small, specially molded earbuds. The sound was a loud, continuous clicking, so loud it would be impossible to hear voices in the room. There was a large medical team involved, including doctors, nurses, and technical staff. In all, over 20 of them. It was during her time at standstill that she had a remarkable near-death experience. This is how she described leaving her body. The next thing I recall was the sound. It was a natural D. As I listened to the sound, I felt it pulling me out the top of my head. The further out of my body I got, the more clean the tone became. I had the impression it was like a road, a frequency that you go on. She described leaving the top of her body through her head, and it was like a pop. For a short while, she found herself looking down on her body while the operation progressed. She said, "I remember seeing several things in the operating room when I was looking down. It was the most aware that I think I've ever been in my entire life. I was metaphorically sitting on the doctor's shoulder. It was not like normal vision. It was brighter and more focused and clearer than normal vision. There was so much in the operating room that I didn't recognize, and so many people." While in this position, she said she was quite happy. We should remember that at this time her eyes were taped shut, and she couldn't possibly be seeing this through her eyes. "I thought the way they had my head shaved was very peculiar. I expected them to take all the hair, but they did not," she said. This is her description. "The sore thing that I hated the sound of looked like an electric toothbrush, and it had a dent in it, a groove at the top where the saw appeared to go into the handle, but it didn't. And the saw had interchangeable blades too, but these blades were in what looked like a socket wrench case. I heard the saw crank up, I didn't see the music on my head, but I heard it being used on something. It was humming at a relatively high pitch, and then all of a sudden it made a noise. The description of the saw is correct. Pam could not have seen the saw before the operation as she was unconscious, and before it was brought out to be used, she had had her eyes taped shut. The surgical team needed a certain amount of blood flow for the heart-lung machine, and that the procedure was to get this from an artery in the leg. Pam recalls hearing a female voice. She said, "Then I heard, her arteries and veins are too small." And the voice of Dr. Spetzler answer, "Use the other side." At that time I was afraid because it was a brain surgery and I saw them operate on the leg. I was afraid that they had made a mistake and they were operating in the wrong place. There were too many people so I couldn't see what he was doing on my leg. I just knew they weren't operating in the right place. And to tell you the truth, it was terrifying. The fact that a conversation was had where they decided to move to the other leg to get the blood flow was confirmed after the operation. This is something that Sam could not have heard even if she had a functioning brain, as she had molded earphones playing loud clicks in her ears. At this point, Sam started to move. She said, "Just after hearing that my veins and my arteries were too small, and after thinking they were in the wrong place for the operation, I saw a tiny dot of light, and I heard my grandmother. She called me. So I went towards it, and I thought I must be dying." She later went into more detail, where she said, "There was a sensation like being pulled, but not against your will. I was going on my own accord because I wanted to go. I have different metaphors to try to explain this. It was like the Wizard of Oz, being taken up in a tornado vortex, only you're not spinning around like you've got vertigo. You're very focused and you have a place to go. The feeling was like going up in an elevator real fast, and there was a sensation, but it wasn't a bodily, physical sensation. It was like a tunnel, but it wasn't a tunnel. At some point very early in the tunnel vortex, I became aware of my grandmother calling me. But I didn't hear her call me with my ears. It was a clearer hearing than with my ears. I trust that sense more than I trust my own ears." She described the tunnel as a dark shaft with a pinpoint of light at the end that got bigger and bigger. The light was very, very bright. She lifted her hands to put them up in front of her face, but she did not see them. She said, "But I knew they were there, not from a sense of touch. Again, it's very hard to explain, but I knew they were there." Pam had her doubts about going through the tunnel and worried she should not be there. She said, "Then I told myself that I did not deserve to be there because I was not someone perfect." My grandmother started to laugh. She told me, not talking to me because they have another way to communicate, she told me I was like a child who is sent to school. They were proud of me and that I deserved to be in their presence. Pam was asked how she first knew it was her grandmother calling her. She said, "I heard her voice. I was born with a unique inner ear, and I hear great voices, sounds and tones. It was also my job, and I remember very well the voice of my grandmother. On hearing it, I remembered the time she called us for dinner when we were kids, and it was the same thing. However, I was very surprised when I saw her because she was not the same. When she died, she was old, but there she didn't seem to be old. I did not expect to see her so well. It was then she started to make out a number of figures in the light. They appeared as if they were light and had light permeating all around them. Soon they started to become more recognizable shapes and she could make sense of what they were. She found she recognized some of the figures. She said, "Everyone I saw, looking back on it, fit perfectly into my understanding of what that person looked like at their best during their lives. I recognized a lot of people. My Uncle Jean was there, so was my great-great-aunt Maggie, who was really a cousin. On Papa's side of the family, my grandfather was there. They were specifically taking care of me, looking after me. They were clothed in light. This is what struck me the most. They looked like human beings, but unlike us, they were clothed in light. They were beings of light, all of which had different tones. They don't communicate by direct voice." When she asked if the light was God, they said no. She said they seemed to think that was a funny question, and they said that the light was what happens when God breathes. Pam described the location where this happened as a sort of a waiting room between Earth and Paradise. She said it was a beautiful place. There was also a feeling that there was a great energy there that restored her strength. At this time, Pam was surprised to see an aunt there because, as far as Pam knew, she was still alive. It was later, after waking from the operation, she found out that the aunt had died while she was in hospital. It was at this point that Pam was told she couldn't stay much longer. She said, "They would not permit me to go further. It was communicated to me. That's the best way I know how to say it, because they didn't speak like I'm speaking. That if I went all the way into the light, something would happen to me physically. They would be unable to put me back into the body, like I had gone too far and they couldn't reconnect. So they wouldn't let me go anywhere or do anything. I knew I was going to return to our world. I did not want to, but I think I had already made the choice before I even got there, because I had children and a husband, and that it was not the time for me. However, I wanted to join this light, which became greater than ever. I wanted to go in, but I was not allowed to. They told me that if I went too far, I could not return to the me that was on the operating table with the surgeons and nurses. Then they, the deceased relatives, were feeding me. They were not doing this through my mouth, like with food, but they were nourishing me with something. The only way I know how to put it is it was something sparkly. Sparkles is the image that I get. I definitely recall the sensation of being nurtured and being fed and being made strong. I know it sounds funny because obviously it wasn't a physical thing, but inside the experience, I felt physically strong, ready for whatever. The journey was coming to an end and she was taken back to her body. As she described it, it was not an easy thing to do. As she said, "Then my uncle took me back and asked me to return to my body. He told me it was like jumping into a pool, but I did not want to. I was afraid it would hurt, and I did not want to return. So he told me, 'Do you not want to see your children? Do you not love your husband and my sister, your mother?' But then I got to the end of it and saw the thing, my body. I didn't want to get into it. It looked terrible, like a train wreck. It looked like it, what it was, dead. I believed it was covered. It scared me and I didn't want to look at it." Pam was struggling with the idea of returning to Earth and leaving this wonderful light behind. She said, "At that moment, I thought my children would be okay and that my husband would take care of them, and my mother had always been able to cope, so I had no intention of returning. Then he pushed me. I felt a definite repelling and at the same time a pulling from my body. The body was pulling and the tunnel was pushing. It was like diving into a pool of ice water. It hurt. It was cold, uncomfortable, and my chest ached." Pam returned to the operating theatre and to her body. Her perception didn't end and she could still make out things that were going on around her. "Then I heard the defibrillator on two occasions. The first time, I did hear that, but the second time I saw them. What surprised me the most that day is that they had music in the operating room. I did not know that was done. I heard the song by the Eagles, Hotel California, and the words that say, 'You can check out any time you like, but you can never leave.' I thought it was terrible, so insensitive. Afterwards, I told my doctor, you know, when I woke up, he said that I needed more sleep. It was impossible for me to be awake at that time to have heard the music." After Pam had been given some time to recover in a hospital room from the operation, she discussed what had happened with her family, and they all thought it was hallucinations, and that in fact it was quite funny, but not everybody was laughing. Pam stated, "That made everyone laugh with the exception of the nurses, the doctor and the anaesthetologist and neurophysiologists. They did not seem to find it funny and they hardly dared to look at me. In fact, they knew I was not hallucinating and that this had occurred. They had never heard of such things before. I thought maybe it was my imagination and I had a dream. But they told me that this was not the case, and what I saw really happened." When Pam was asked if she was afraid to die, she said, "No, are you kidding? I'm more afraid to live. Dying is nothing. It's easy. Living is hard." Now, I just thought I would talk a little bit about how they measured the activity in Pam's brain. There are three ways that are used to determine brain death, an EEG measures brain activity. What is known as auditory evoked potentials measure the brainstem, and the third is blood flow to the brain. The EEG showed a flat line. There were no auditory evoked potentials that were measured using the loud clicks that were played into Pam's ears. There was no blood flow as the blood had been drained from her brain. The earplugs were put in before the surgeon commented on Pam's arteries, and the specification on the sound was that they played 11.3 clicks per second at 95 decibels. They said the moulded speakers in her ears themselves, let alone the 95 decibel clicks, would have made it impossible for her to hear the comment in the ordinary way, even if she had been fully conscious at that moment. So we know absolutely that Pam's brain was not functioning at the time she had the experience. This rules out hallucinations, fantasies, or other delusions. Dr. Peter Fenwick, a neuropsychiatrist, said, "The brain isn't functioning. It's not there. It's destroyed. It's abnormal. But yet, it can produce these very clear experiences. An unconscious state is when the brain ceases to function. For example, if you faint, you fall on the floor. You don't know what's happening and the brain isn't working. The memory systems are particularly sensitive to unconsciousness. So you won't remember anything. But yet, after one of these experiences, a near-death experience, you come out with a clear, lucid memory. This is a real puzzle for science, and I have not yet seen any good scientific explanation which can explain that fact." It may be argued that she made it up, but then how would she be able to add the specifics of what actually happened when she was dead? She described the conversation about moving to another leg for the arteries. She accurately described the sore. She correctly stated that she heard the Eagles song, Hotel California. So what are we to make of this case of near-death experience? By the three measures of discerning death, Pam Reynolds was definitely dead. And if we can be sure of that, then where did her experience come from? On the NPR.org website, there is a report by Barbara Bradley Haggerty called Decoding the Mystery of Near-Death Experiences. She goes into the near-death experience of Pam Reynolds and talks to believers and non-believers. Barbara Haggerty says that Dr. Spetzler said her account matches his memory. He said, "From a scientific perspective, I have absolutely no explanation about how it could have happened." Dr. Sabom is a cardiologist researching near-death experiences and wrote in the book Light and Death, One Doctor's Fascinating Account of Near-Death Experiences. He said, "With Pam's permission, they sent me her records from the surgery. And long story short, what she said happened to her is actually what Spetzler did." Dr. Sabom considered the accurate description of the bone saw. He said, "She could not have heard it because of what they did to her ears. In addition, both of her eyes were taped shut, so she couldn't open her eyes and see what was going on. Her physical sensory perception was off the table." Gerald Worley, an Australian anaesthetologist, has spent time looking into the Pam Reynolds NDE and does not believe it to be spiritual. He stated his viewpoint as this: "This report provides absolutely no evidence for survival of any sort of consciousness outside the body during near-death experiences or any other such experiences." Worley says, "When they cut into her head, she was brought into consciousness. At that stage in the surgery, the blood had not been removed from her brain. He believes she could hear, despite the clicking earplugs." Worley has two ideas on this. He said, one, that the earphones or plugs were not that tightly fitting, or two, it could have been that it was due to sound transmission through the operating table itself. Both of these suggestions are obviously speculations on his part and in no way prove that Pam Reynolds could hear anything. And regarding the bone saw, he further speculated that Sam recognised a sound from her childhood. He said, "She made a picture in her mind of a machine or a device which was very similar to what she was familiar with, a dental drill." Worley suggests Reynolds went through anaesthesia awareness, in which a person is conscious but can't move. He says that this sort of thing happened in one out of every 2,000 operations. I personally find Dr. Worley's explanations to be quite poor. He's making guesses of what might have happened if Pam Reynolds had had some consciousness and could hear through the loud, rapid clicking sounds in her ears. Neither Sabon or Spetzler are convinced by Worley's ideas. They believe the combination of anesthesia and the slow-moving brain activity caused by hypothermia meant that Reynolds could not form or retain memories for a large part of the operation. Some researchers look at the data and say this type of spiritual experience is only a brain gasping for oxygen, all fully explainable by science. Others say there is an encounter with spirit. Where a scientist stands on this issue has little to do with the findings of any study. It has almost everything to do with the scientist's personal beliefs. Hi, Simon here. As some of you may know, I have a diploma in clinical hypnotherapy and I'm certified in past life regression therapy. Now, taking part in a past life regression is an amazing thing, and past life regression therapy can be a powerful process. I conduct sessions over Zoom. So if you've ever wanted to explore your past lives in a single session, or have an issue you want to work on, go to my website at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk, where you can message me or you can book a free 20-minute consultation. And at the moment, I am offering a 25% discount to everyone that has signed up to the Patreon campaign. The link is in the show notes. Vicky Umepeg has had two NDEs in her life. The first was when she was 12 years old, and the second was when she was 22. The extraordinary thing about her near-death experiences was that she could see so much, and yet in life she was blind. Vicky was born prematurely at 22 weeks. As this was the 1950s, the procedure for caring for babies this small was to put them in an airlock incubator, where the baby would breathe an oxygen-rich atmosphere. The system was not good, and the oxygen level was not properly controlled. The result was that she received too much oxygen and her optic nerves were damaged. In an interview with Greg Wilson, she talked about her total lack of sight. He asked her if she could see anything, and she replied, "Nothing, never, no light, no shadows, no nothing, ever." He asked her to confirm that her optic nerves were damaged in both eyes. She said yes. And so I've never been able to understand even the concept of light. One night in 1973, Vicky was working in a nightclub as a singer. When the club closed, she wasn't able to get a taxi and accepted a ride home with two of the club's customers. The pair of them had been drinking all evening, and the inevitable happened, and they had a serious accident. Vicky had a fractured skull, damage to her neck, back, and one of her legs. She has an indistinct memory of moving in and out of her body and being able to look down on the accident. The one thing she was really able to recollect was that she wasn't in her body and that she had a form, she said, that was much like being made of light. The next time she came to awareness was in the hospital emergency room. She was looking down from the ceiling, watching a doctor and a woman working on her body. She couldn't tell if the woman was a nurse or also a doctor. She reported their conversation, which was later confirmed by the doctor, where they were worried about damage to her eardrum. Vicky tried to talk to them and tell them she was okay, but of course they didn't see or hear her. As she looked down, she got a very slight glimpse of her body, but she was sure it was her. She said, "I knew it was me. I was pretty thin then. I was quite tall and thin at that point, and I recognised at first that it was a body, but I didn't even know that it was mine initially. Then I perceived that I was up on the ceiling, and I thought, 'Well, this is kind of weird, what am I doing up here?' I thought, 'Well, this must be me, am I dead?' I just briefly saw this body and I knew that it was mine because I wasn't in mine. Then I was just away from it, it was that quick." Vicky was later asked what it was like for her to see for the first time. She said, "I had a hard time relating to it. I had real difficult time relating to it because I've never experienced it, and it was something very foreign to me. Let's see, how can I put it into words? It was like hearing words and not being able to understand them, but knowing that they were words, and before you'd never heard anything. But it was something new, something you'd not been able to previously attach any meaning to." It was at this point that she started going upwards very fast. She passed up through the floors of the hospital. As she rose into the sky, she felt excited and revelled in the freedom she felt. It was then she began to perceive some form of music sounded like wind chimes. The next thing she knew, she was in a tube and travelling head first along it. It was dark, but there was light ahead of her. As she got to the end, she said the music transformed into singing, like hymns. She said when she left the tube, it felt like she rolled out of it. There was amazing light all around her, and there were trees and flowers. There was also a large amount of people around her. She said the light was something that could be felt. She had a tremendous feeling of love in the light. She said, "Everybody there was made of light, and I was made of light. There was love everywhere. It was like love came from the grass, love came from the birds, love came from the trees." It was then Vicky saw that there were five people she knew. Two of them, Debbie and Diane, were blind school friends that had died years before, when they were aged 11 and 6. In life, they had been blind as well as Vicky. But now she saw them as bright, healthy individuals who were now grown up and, as Vicky put it, in their prime. She also saw her childhood carers, who had also died. It was then she saw her grandmother, who had died 2 years previously. They did not speak, but she felt welcomed and loved. It was then Vicky became overwhelmed with a sense of total knowledge. She said, "I had a feeling like I knew everything, and like everything made sense. I just knew that this place was where I could find the answers to all the questions about life, and about the planets, and about God, and about everything. It's like the place was the knowing." She was flooded with information about all sorts of things. She said, "I don't know beans about math and science. I all of a sudden understood intuitively almost things about calculus and the way the planets were made. And I don't know anything about that. I felt there was nothing I did not know." It was then she became aware of a figure of light next to her. This figure's brightness was far greater than the others she had met. Despite being just a form of light, Vicky assumed this to be Jesus. The form communicated with her. It said, "Isn't it wonderful? Everything is beautiful here and it fits together. And you'll find that. But you can't stay here now. It's not your time to be here yet, and you have to go back." Vicky was very disappointed and said she wanted to stay with him. The being assured her that she would return. It said, "Go back and learn and teach more about loving and forgiving." She was told that she needed to go back to have her children. Vicky was not yet a mother and relented and agreed to return. The being then said to her, "But first, watch this." Vicky was then shown, as she put it, "everything from my birth," in a review of her life. The being talked to her throughout, discussing what she had done and what the repercussions were. The being then said, "You have to leave now." It was at that point she felt what she described as a sickening thud, like a roller coaster going backwards, and she was back in her body. She said that during the NDE, it was wonderful to be out there and be free, to not worry about bumping into anything. Now, there are skeptics who say that these NDE experiences are dreams. Vicky was asked about her dreams and how they compare to her near-death experience. First of all, she was asked how she would compare her dreams to her near-death experiences. Vicky said, "No similarity. No similarity at all." She was then asked if she had any kind of visual perception in her dreams. Vicky replied, "Nothing. No colour, no sight of any sort. No shadows, no light, no nothing." She was then asked what kind of perceptions she was aware of in her dreams. Vicky laughed and said, "Taste. I have a lot of eating dreams. And I have dreams when I'm playing the piano and singing, which I do for a living anyway. I have dreams in which I touch things. I taste things, touch things, hear things and smell things. That's it." She was asked to confirm that she had no visual perceptions in her dreams, and she confirmed that was the case. The interviewer then asked that what she experienced during her NDE was quite different to her dreams. She replied, "Yeah, because there's no visual impression at all in any dream that I have." Hello listeners, this is Simon. Now, as some of you know, I have a diploma in clinical hypnotherapy, and I'm certified in past life regression therapy. And in the past few weeks, I've taken many clients through some amazing and healing past life regressions. And I conduct sessions over Zoom, and I've had clients from many countries around the world. Now, when you go through a past life regression, you will feel totally in control and remember everything. And also, I record the whole session and send you an MP3 afterwards. And this gives you space to relax and go with the flow, knowing that you can listen back later and analyse what you experienced if you need to. So if you ever wanted to explore your past lives in a single session, or have an issue you want to work on, you can go to my website at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk and book a free 20-minute consultation. And at the moment, I'm offering a 25% discount to everyone that has signed up to the Patreon campaign. The link is in the show notes. Thank you for listening to the Past Lives Podcast, Episode 2. You can find the website at www.pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. And if you'd like to email me, I'd be very glad to hear from you. And don't forget to subscribe. Goodbye.